this is Paul Puckett, and welcome back to Getting There. Last week, we talked quite a bit about the need for you to unlearn something and how much more difficult it is to unlearn than simply to learn something. Because unlearning involves turning loose of something you believe based on what you've been taught and replacing it with something new. And that can be very difficult for most of us. We talked about where some of what we learned came from that we shouldn't have learned. I called it psychobabble from the Alan Parsons song on Eye in the Sky. Psychobabble to describe the media that you mainly see on the internet, TV, radio, print. On investing, everybody seems to have a solution for you. If you follow the trading strategy, you'll get 50% a year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it makes it difficult for us to understand what we really should be doing, which, quite frankly, is very simple but very difficult because it's so easy to do. So what we're going to do today is we're going to begin looking at a problem, a storm that's coming for you as an investor, particularly if you're 50 plus and you're in bond funds, and what you can do about that storm. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about one source of information we get that may be the most powerful source we have, and that's our parents. We all had parents, or we had somebody that was a mentor to us that did what parents would typically do. They taught us life lessons that we remember. And many of those life lessons are never going to change. They're appropriate in any setting or any situation all the way out into the future. As an example of a great piece of advice that your parents might have given you, they might have told you to avoid debt, spend less than you earn, don't live beyond your means. All good advice. It will always be good advice. Here's another piece of good advice that a friend of mine mentioned earlier this week. They said, my dad told me one day, be satisfied and grateful for what you have. There are always others that have less. If you aren't satisfied with what you have, work for what you want. Otherwise, stop complaining. I told him, I said, you know, your dad was a wise man. And I didn't realize, they told me, well, unfortunately, he's got Alzheimer's, dementia, and those pearls of wisdom are gone. And I told them, I don't know if you've had to deal with anybody with Alzheimer's. When I was a trust officer, I had many clients who developed Alzheimer's, and it's just an awful disease. It's very difficult for family and for people that knew someone who is slowly losing their mental capacity. I told him, I said, I'm sorry to hear he's got Alzheimer's, but his pearls of wisdom are not gone. You carry those pearls now. And I think that's what we should look at from a good standpoint. Our parents provide us with pearls of wisdom so we can go out in the world, become adults, and make our way in life. But some of what our parents tell us is inaccurate, and we figure that out over time. And some of what they tell us is accurate when they tell us, but not accurate today. So one of the things I bump into a lot and have bumped into over the course of my career is pieces of advice like avoid the stock market, which comes a lot from people who really grandparents these days, but earlier in my career, parents who saw what happened to their parents or themselves during the Great Depression. You know, the Great Depression was an awful period in the stock market, but in reality, it didn't take that long for investors to recover as long as they stayed in the market. The lesson of the Great Depression is not to not invest in the markets, in stocks, mutual funds preferably, in my opinion, but in the stock market. The lesson is don't put money in the stock market that you need in the next decade. That's 10 years. You don't want to have to sell when you know you've got an expense coming up in a year, 2 years, 5 years. You don't want to have to sell if the market's down at that point. You want to have assets in the stock market that can ride for quite a long time should the market fall. Well, another piece of advice I've bumped into that people got from their parents is buy bonds. Buy bonds because over time they'll produce income. When you retire, you'll be able to live off the income on these bonds. Well, at the time, that was probably very good advice. Interest rates have very, very long cycles. Very, very long cycles. And when I say very long, 30 years average. And we're actually currently in about the 36th year or 34th year of a period of time where interest rates have been gradually decreasing. Now, what impact does that have on you? And most of what I'm going to talk about today is in my book, Retirement Income Lock, which provides guidance on a strategy. It's not a product. It's not a service. It's a strategy of how to invest money where you maintain growth by being in the markets and at the same time have an income stream in addition to Social Security that you can't outlive. Sounds almost unbelievable, doesn't it? The issue with the bond market is this. There's two things you need to know. First of all, in 1982, if you wanted to earn $1,000 in investment income per month, so $12,000 per year, all you would need to do is buy a U.S. Treasury bond, probably a 30-year, and put in $85,000. Why? Well, because they were running 13, 14, 15% back then. So literally, if you retired in 1982 and you bought this 30-year bond, you would have an income of $12,000 per year and you would get your $85,000 back in 2012. Now, unfortunately, at that point, you'd be a little lost as to what to do unless you maintained growth investments because interest rates fell so dramatically. Today, if you wanted to generate $12,000 a year or $1,000 a month, you'd need over $600,000. And that's because interest rates have plummeted. That doesn't consider the impact of inflation. Today, if you need $1,000 a month in spending power, you need almost $1 million to generate that each month. $12,000 a year in 1982 dollars requires almost $1 million today to invest. Now, there are those of you who saved, who did well, who invested well, who had high income careers, and you have a portfolio of that size. But for most Americans, that is it's not as high as it used to be. $1 million used to be a lot of money. It still is, but it's not like it was 20 years ago. Now, $5-10 million, that's what $1 million used to be. For those who are below $1 million, I get it. $1 million is a lot of money. But when you look at it in the history of time and you look at what people have done with their investment portfolios and how they've used them to generate income in the past, we enter an environment where the advice, buy bonds, is not as good as it used to be, and here's why. It's not just that you need so much more of them to generate the income in a 1% to 3% interest rate environment. The issue is bond values are based on movements in interest rates. So interest rates tick up slightly, and bonds lose value. They go down slightly and bonds lose value. So over the past 30-something years, bonds have been a great investment. There have only been a few years where they lost money. Each one of those years was when interest rates stabilized and came up slightly before continuing their descent. And it was a dramatic descent. Let's think about that for half a minute. So it's good to buy bonds in a decreasing rate environment. The opposite is that it's not good to buy bonds in an increasing rate environment. They move in opposite directions. It's even worse if you're in a bond fund. If you own an individual bond, you can always hold it to maturity and get back your full value. But if you're in a bond funds never mature. The manager is going to trade bonds to maintain income level and do his best to beat the bond index from a performance standpoint. But even if he matches it, in a decreasing rate environment, he will make money. In an increasing rate environment, which we're entering, he will lose money. And that leaves people 50 plus that are in bond funds, and some of you that are younger are in them. What amazes me, I'll tell you what amazes me, is professionals, my peers in the industry, still have bonds in an asset allocation. Now, why do they do that? They know what's coming. There's a storm coming, but they're not paying any attention to that storm. Why? Well, if you need an alternative to bonds, what are you going to buy? Are you going to put what you used to have in bonds in the stock market? Where do you go when you have bonds and you know you shouldn't? What do you invest in? And that's what the retirement income lock strategy is all about. The storm that's coming is not going to be pretty. And it's not going to be something that you should be involved in. And the way to do that is get out of the bond market, particularly bond funds. For those of you that are very wealthy and you own individual municipal bonds, you will see paper losses, but you can hold those bonds until maturity. The problem with buying smaller bonds, by the way, is the bond market is the least transparent. There's a word I need to explain, I bet. The bond market is one of the least transparent markets there is. Let's take a break, and when we get back, let's talk a little bit about transparency and then get to what we need to unlearn. Hi, this is Paul Puckett. As you may know, I love coffee. My friends would tell you I don't love coffee. It's an obsession, and not just any coffee. Espresso. If you're in the Bradenton area, one of the jewels of Bradenton is Old Main Street, and you'll find a coffee shop, B-Town Coffee, with a great alley and awnings and fans to keep you cool in the summer and in the shade, free Wi-Fi, and quite frankly, the best hot dog in town. Stop by. You'll enjoy B-Town Coffee. So here's the problem, as we were talking about what we need to unlearn, but we need to unlearn buying bonds because the environment has changed. It's not what it used to be. But we need to find an alternative to those. Here's the issue that I have as a professional with the media in general and some of my fellow professionals. The problem is when you go look for an alternative, you bump into alternatives that you've previously believed maybe were just not good investments at all. And we're going to get to that, but let me give you an example of what I see regularly in the media. America's number one financial columnist is Jane Bryant Quinn. You remember last week I mentioned that you should know the source and where what their experience and knowledge is of any information you read. Now, Jane Bryant Quinn has a degree in journalism and communication. She's extremely bright. She's a wonderful person. I have absolutely nothing against Jane Bryant Quinn, and often she writes very good articles. The problem is her sources, which she doesn't always name, she doesn't have to unless she quotes them, her sources have biases. They're human. All humans have bias. And their bias against certain products forces them to continue recommending bonds in an environment where they know, Jane may not know, but the professionals know, this is not really the right place to be. If they don't know that, they're not looking at history. And yes, regulators require all investment advisors and brokers to say past history is no guarantee of future performance, which is absolutely true. On the other hand, if you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. And that applies to investing as well. Of course, you're going to look at history. It doesn't guarantee anything, but it lets you know, it gives you an indication of what to expect. So let's take a look at what's been happening in the bond market over the past few years. In 2012, the fall of 2012, Jane Bryant Quinn wrote an article in the most widely read magazine in America, by far, and that's AARP magazine. She said, now is the time for bonds. The following year, 3 months later, all bond funds pretty much lost money, except for high yield. The fund that lost the most of the ones she listed was the one she most strongly recommended, Vanguard Treasury Inflation Protected Securities Fund. Treasury Inflation Protected Securities pay a lower interest rate, but they give you a kicker when certain things trigger in the market an indication of inflation. So they protect you from inflation. The problem is that formula doesn't take into consideration everything that's happening from an interest rate standpoint. And in 2013, interest rates ticked up slightly, but it wasn't the type of interest rate that bond tracks. That fund lost 8.2% that year. That was not the time to buy bonds, and the time to buy bonds is a long way into the future. It's not now. Now, can interest rates still fall? Sure, we're going to get into that in a second. So, in the most recent issue, I believe, hold on a second, let me look. Yep. In April 2016's AARP magazine, steer clear of risky bond funds. You can get burned by reaching too high for more yield on investments. You know, when I saw that, I thought, good, they're finally telling people what they need to know. They're finally telling people you need to stay clear of the bond market. However, what they're talking about in this article are high-yield bond funds. High-yield bond funds are a different animal. They don't function the way normal bonds do. They're less affected by interest rates. Now, what are high-yield bonds? It's what we used to call junk bonds, but who wants to buy junk bonds? So we call them high-yield bonds. And they do have much higher yield. Why do they have a much higher yield? Well, because the companies that borrow, generally speaking, high-yield bond funds or corporate bonds are what they hold. And the corporations that issue these bonds don't have high credit quality. So they have to pay a higher interest rate, just like you and I do. When they borrow from the market or from the bank, because their credit is not as good, they have to pay a higher rate. Now, does that mean you shouldn't own high-yield bond funds? No, not at all. You need to recognize there's more risk of default in those bonds, so it's best to do it in the context of a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund. You get a higher yield in exchange for a little more risk. But what affects the performance of high-yield bond funds is economic growth. If companies begin to have problems and the economy is sliding downwards, high-yield bonds fund will lose money, even if interest rates are declining and helping other bonds. One of the things you can unlearn if you read that article is it says you should invest in Treasury and other U.S. government securities in funds, unsexy funds you may have overlooked that invest in Treasuries and other U.S. government securities. They yield virtually zilch, but when stocks prices take a tumble, they rise in price. Okay, that's flat out not true. That sometimes happens, but it's not the fall of the stock market that drives that. It's changes in interest rates. The market can take off in whatever direction it wants. It can plummet. It can go up. It does both regularly. Bond funds aren't affected by the stock market very much. They're affected by changes in interest rates, except for, as I mentioned, the high-yield bond funds, which she's saying to shy away from. If the economy is beginning to recover, you want to buy high-yield bond funds. In my opinion, you own them all the time. The defaults, generally speaking, are not so great that you lose significant money over time in a high-yield bond fund. So if our economy has been sort of stagnant, it would be the right time to buy high-yield bond funds. You should be avoiding treasury funds completely. Bias. Unlearning bias. The problem you have unlearning is professionals and journalists and financial reporters also have bias. Like I said, they're human too. So when they look at the alternatives to bonds, here's what they see. First of all, what did we used to get from bonds? Well, bonds are generally added to a portfolio to give some stability and a modicum of safety to the otherwise risky part of your investment. So, you know, typically, let's say you're in your 40s, you might be 60, 70% stock, 15, 20% bonds, 5% cash, not counting, of course, your emergency fund. Today, that just doesn't make sense because you're not decreasing the risk of your portfolio when you're in bonds. But the alternative, the obvious alternative, would be CDs. You're not going to lose any value on a CD. FDIC insured, you're fine. But the interest rates on CDs are just not very appealing. Now, I will tell you, if you don't like the alternatives I recommend to bond funds, CDs are better than bond funds. CDs are far better than bond funds right now. I wouldn't go long term. You know, 1 year interest rate, maybe you're going to get 1.5, 1.25 if you get lucky. reverse that 1.5 if you get lucky. You might find even the 1.75 out there somewhere. Depends on when you listen to this broadcast. But at least then you know you're not going to lose any principal value. Bond funds, it's time to get out. It's absolutely time to get out. We're going to take another brief break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about a story of how things can be invented, and then it turns out what they were invented to do isn't what they're best at. When we get back. So what if you invented something with a specific purpose and then over time discovered that what you invented actually served a different purpose, and that's what made the product take off? Let's go back over 100 years to 1860. And by the way, I'm sort of enjoying this segment because one of my favorite AM talk radio personalities was Paul Harvey, and he would tell a story and then tell you the rest of the story. And in a way, I'm doing that now with this story, which he probably told. It's probably the first place I heard it. Back in 1860, a British doctor, Sir Joseph Lister, began working on a real problem. Now, speaking of unlearning, brief break here, speaking of unlearning, you know, forgetting is really easy. We do it all the time. So you may have forgotten the name Louis Pasteur, the famous scientist. And Dr. Lister followed his theories. Pasteur believed that invisible germs, we now call them bacteria, could be the cause of numerous infections. And, you know, you need to realize that back then, it's not been that long ago that going to a hospital, you might die. You get exposed to things that we simply didn't even know were there. Well, in 1865, Dr. Lister carried on an operation in a chamber that had been sterilized by a pulverizing antiseptic in the air. And they discovered that by making the environment where they conducted surgery sterile, less people got infections and passed away. This is a good thing. So not too many years later, there was a conference on his research, and he noticed a fellow by the name of Dr. Joseph Lawrence and Robert Wood Johnson. Now, Robert Wood Johnson went on to found the Johnson & Johnson Group. And they began looking at this particular product as not just a counter disinfectant. You could use it on floors. You could use it on anything. And the best part was it was non-toxic. You could pour it directly on a wound if you wanted to. And matter of fact, they did. I don't know want to know what that felt like personally. But over time, they discovered that maybe the germs that cause bad infections are also the germs that cause bad breath. Dr. Lister's product, Listerine. Back then, believe it or not, there was no mouthwash. Nobody had thought about it. They discovered that this antiseptic that killed germs, and you can still use it that way in an emergency today, that you could rinse your mouth with it and your breath would smell better. It would kill the germs that cause bad breath. And it created an industry, and the company was very, very successful. There's an investment product that I believe fits that story. It was not created by the insurance industry for the purpose of being a bond alternative. It wasn't created, as a matter of fact, what it was created to do, it doesn't do. I'm just telling you. Before we go to that product, I want to tell you a little bit about what I expect your reaction to be. Facebook, LinkedIn, both periodically have sponsored advertising. They have, and people can make comments about what they see. And recently, this product was being promoted by a company that I'll leave nameless. And, you know, they were promising this, that, and the other. As you hear me saying, you can have a guaranteed income for life. They said something similar. And the comments were, never buy this product. This product is awful. My parents told me never buy one of these. The bias against this product goes beyond individual investors, though. certified financial planners, investment advisors. Don't like this product in general. Well, some CFPs do. The issue is the name of the product. The name of the product is annuity. Annuity. What's your reaction to that word? I asked a few weeks ago people what their reaction was to the word money. My reaction, I'm going to tell you my reaction. 20 years ago, my reaction to the word annuity is the broker needed a commission. I don't know why you did it, but that's why he sold it. Great sales skills, evidently, because you shouldn't have bought that. Now, at the time, even though I'd been licensed and educated in the industry for, at that time, 7-8 years, when I heard the word annuity, I thought of one type of annuity, a variable annuity. Variable annuities have outrageous expenses, in my opinion. You're paying between 3 and 5% by the time you load it up with riders for most variable annuity products. It's hard to make money when you're paying expenses of 3 to 5%. It just is. Now, there's some no-load variable annuities offered through companies like Schwab that don't have expense ratios at that level or long surrender charge periods. But still, you're still paying a lot more than you would for a Schwab mutual fund. Now, what you get from an annuity, any annuity, but what you get from a variable annuity is tax deferral on anything you don't take out of the contract. However, for those of you in higher tax brackets, listen closely. All gains on any annuity are treated as ordinary income. So if you're in a higher bracket, why would you want to convert your capital gains to ordinary income tax level? Keep in mind, you can defer it until you pull it out. But when you pull it out, it is not capital gains. When you pass away, it does not get a step up in basis. It's income, not principal growth, regardless of where it came from. I still feel that way today, as you probably can tell, about variable annuities. I do not recommend them. There's better ways to skin the cat. But there are a flood of other types of annuities, and the problem is they're simple products from the standpoint of an annuity is an insurance contract issued by an insurance company. And in real simple, they're the reverse of life insurance. Life insurance, let's say you pay $100 a month starting at age, 40. And 30 years later, you pass away and you pay this $100 a month the whole time. When you pass away, the company sends a check to your heirs. So the big check is at the end. Your checks are small. The life insurance company writes the big check. With an annuity, you write the big check. And then at some point, either beginning immediately or some point in the future, the insurance company sends you a check every month. Quarterly, semi-annually, or annually if you prefer, but at least once a year, you're being paid guaranteed for whatever time period you choose or for life or for life. There's another misconception. Let's clear that one up for fun. If you put your money into an immediate annuity and they start sending the income checks and you pass away, the money's gone. Well, if you choose the life-only option, that's true. That's absolutely true. But, you know, there's other options like 5-year certain, 10-year certain, 15, 20, 25-year certain, your life and your spouse's life, refund, installment refund, whatever's left when you pass away goes to your beneficiary. There's lots and lots and lots of options. So here's the take on the product that's the perfect alternative for bonds. Grand pause. Here's the take. A lot of professionals will look at you and say, I don't understand why you did this. Why? Because they either can't offer them or they can't charge an advisory fee on them. Keep in mind, I'm an investment advisor and an insurance agent. Let's do the quick disclosure. Serving clients in Virginia and Florida as an investment advisor representative of Q1 Advisors and serving as an independent insurance agent in Florida and Virginia. When I take, for instance, money that I'm currently managing for a client and recommend they move it to an annuity of some kind, I can't charge a fee on that annuity anymore. Little secret, I just decreased my income. Now, on the other hand, I am paid a commission. Almost all annuities are commission products. Not all, but most. I am paid by the insurance company, but it's only a slight offset. It's a one-time payment. It's a one-time payment as opposed to an income stream for ongoing management. But if I'm a fiduciary, have we discussed fiduciary? That's someone who has to act in your best interest. If I have to act in your best interest and I don't recommend something to you because I lose income when I do, well, then I'm not really acting in your best interest, am I? Let's address with a song the overall idea most of us have about the market in general. I'm going to continue the Alan Parsons theme because, you know, it's hard to find music that fits my message that doesn't involve like love or something. I mean, the majority of songs I hear either about how wonderful she is or he is or how it all went wrong. That's not going to help you here. Let's take a look briefly at, I say take a look, take a listen to a great song, Alan Parsons, Turn of a Friendly Card.
Smiling faces and bright plastic chains, and a wheel in perpetual motion. And they follow the races and pay out the gains with no show of an outward emotion. And they think it will make their lives easier. Oh, God knows up till now it's been hard. On the turn of a friendly card. No, the game never ends when your whole world depends on the turn of a friendly card. There's a sign in the desert that lies to the west, where you can't tell the night from the sunrise. And not all the king's horses and all the king's men have prevented the fall of the young ones. For they think it will make their lives easier, and God knows up till now it's been hard. But the game never ends when your whole world depends on the turn of a friendly card. But a pilgrim must follow in search of a shrine as he enters inside the cathedral.
Turn of a Friendly Card was an Alan Parsons project released back, I believe, in 1980. And the entire album is about the dangers of gambling, what happens to people when they gamble. A lot of people look at the stock market and investing in general as a gamble, but there's a big difference. Let me briefly tell you what the basic difference is. When you gamble, you place a bet. Or you play a round of poker, or you play blackjack, you play a game, and that game has an end. The stock market doesn't have an end. Well, you know, if things go the wrong direction eventually, maybe it will. But as long as we have a certain element of capitalism here, the stock market is what? It's a place where people and institutions trade investments like stocks. There's a bond market, there's a stock market, commodity market, there's all sorts of markets out there. The difference, you can gamble in the stock market if you want to, day trade or do something like that, but you can also buy long term. You can buy individual stocks directly, you can buy a mutual fund or exchange traded fund, and you can hold it for as long as you'd like. It doesn't have to end. That is different than gambling. That is different than gambling. Can you lose money in the stock market or any market? Yes. Can you make money? Yes. Does the house have all the odds when it comes to the stock market? No. No. You can actually have two investors both win, even if one's selling the same thing the other one's buying. It doesn't make sense when I say that, but the reason is, well, when you sell something, you're buying something else. So how well did it do? You know, you don't want to look back. You don't want to look back. I saw a post by Mark Cuban on Facebook about a guy who really shouldn't look back. I think his name was Robert Wayne. He sold his stake in 1986 in Apple for $800. Today it would be worth over, I think it was $15 billion or $5 billion. It would have been worth $5 billion. Never look back. It's not healthy. But what's interesting in that song, and the reason I chose it, is the game never ends when your whole world depends on the turn of a friendly card. When you invest, as opposed to gambling, diversification makes sense. It's basically the investment version of don't put all your eggs in one basket. So the reason why you need to consider forgetting any advice you ever had about make sure part of your money is safe in bonds is because it's not safe there anymore. But when you look for an alternative, what do you need? You need something that's safe. You need something that doesn't lose value. And you need something that generates income. Now, you will hear some of my peers, insurance agents, telling you you can get the return of the market without the risk. That's in an indexed annuity. Here's the thing. You're not going to get the return of the market. And you're not going to eliminate risk. There's still risk. It's not a risk of market loss. It's not a risk of market loss. It's opportunity cost. You're unlikely over the long term to get a return comparable to the stock market. So you still need both. Indexed annuities are simply a fixed annuity. Well, let's define that. Fixed deferred annuity, basically similar to a CD. Regulators don't like it when we say that if we're insurance agents, so let me clarify. CDs have FDIC insurance, but let's say you buy a 5-year CD with a 2% interest rate. You can give the money to the bank, they give you 2%. The bank stays in business, they give you back $100,000. The bank doesn't stay in the business, the FDIC gives you back the $100,000. Your $100,000 is safe, protected at two levels, and you get an interest rate. You can also give the $100,000 to an insurance company for a fixed annuity. This is an alternative to bonds. And a plain vanilla fixed annuity has a term, 3, 4, 5, 6, up to 10 years. Some may go longer. And the insurance company guarantees your principal and a stated interest rate. For instance, 10-year fixed annuity, 3%. All right, well, what's an indexed annuity? It maintains the principal guarantee of a vanilla fixed annuity, but the interest rate is based on an underlying index like the S&P 500. You don't actually put any money, and the insurance company doesn't either, into the S&P 500. Your interest rate is calculated based on what the S&P 500 does. That's different. But that's also why you can't get the return of the market without the risk, because they're not going to give you 100% of what the market does, particularly if it goes above a cap. These products almost always have caps, participation rates. You need a. This is the one area where you can't do it yourself for the most part, because most products have to be provided by an agent. But here's the key to these products. I was sitting in a seminar, annuity hater. That was me. Still, variable annuities, I don't know if you'd say I'm a hater, but I just can't find a legitimate reason to recommend one, never have. I'm sitting in this seminar that I had to go to maintain my insurance license, and the person speaking was speaking during the bear market of 2000 to 2000, early 2003. And they used that phrase, get the return of the market without the risk, and they told us what we needed to do is go to all our clients and tell them, you need to get out of the stock market. You need to put your money in these indexed annuities because you'll have a principal guarantee. You'll get the return of the market without the risk. Well, I was sitting in the room and I happened to have my laptop, and it wasn't something where we couldn't, check email or whatever during the meeting. And I was trying not to, quite frankly, laugh out loud and challenge the speaker, but I decided to stay quiet, and I was just looking at the computer doing some research on these products. Well, it seemed to me they generally earned a return comparable to bonds. Annuities, for the most part, by definition, are income investments, not growth investments. So as I sat there, I thought, okay, here is a product like Listerine. Here's a product like Listerine that was developed for one purpose, to protect people from market losses and give them returns similar to the stock market, they said. But in reality, it's a bond alternative. It's the perfect bond alternative. Here's why. If you're already retired and you need income, here's the problem with the immediate annuity. Immediate annuity, you give a check to the insurance company and you get checks for as long as you live or whatever other criteria you put on it, as we already talked about. A joint life, a period certain, meaning a specific number of years, a combination of those, or an installment or cash refund, so that should you pass away before your money has all been distributed, it goes to your heirs. So you've got some variety there, which builds in some safety and makes it more logical. But what an indexed annuity does is similar, but it's a little different. With an immediate annuity, the problem I've seen as a professional is when I ask someone who's often been told by somebody other than me, you know, their CPA or somebody, you should get an immediate annuity. They don't want to write a check and know the check is gone from a behavioral standpoint. The value of an immediate annuity is only in the income you're going to get from it. The value itself is no longer in your portfolio. Nice estate reduction technique, by the way. So you put the $100,000 in, and 2 days later, 2 years later, you need money. You better have some other, because you're not going to get it out of an immediate annuity. Now, an indexed annuity, because it's basically a fixed annuity, often features an income rider. That's where the guaranteed income comes from. But here's the deal. You put in $100,000, $25,000, $1,000,000, whatever it is you're investing. You put that money into the account, into the annuity. And when you trigger the income and it is distributed to you, the value of your original investment plus any interest it gained before you started taking out income is still there. Now, let's say your index rider, your index annuity rider, that's a little jargon, so let's just put it this way. Let's say the income they distribute to you that's guaranteed is at a rate higher than what the annuity earns. This is one of the two ways you can lose money in an indexed annuity. You're earning 3%, it's distributing 6%. Well, that means 3% had to come from where? Your investment. So over time, those distributions can eliminate the value of the annuity. Of course, because the annuity company guaranteed the income for the rest of your life, should they run out of your money to give you on top of whatever you're earning with it from them, you still get the checks, even if it hits zero. And of course, that takes 20, 25 years, and that's assuming low rates of return stay that way forever. 5 years from now, there's still money in that contract if you need it. There's still some safety of knowing I still have that money. I just know that it's likely to decline as I take out 6%, 5.5%, depending on your age, distributions. Makes it easier to buy. Has a slightly lower distribution rate, depending on your age, of an immediate annuity. So why am I talking about all this? You don't want to depend on the turn of a friendly card. You don't want to put all your money into one thing, and you certainly don't want to put part of your money into something where the odds of winning are almost nil. Let's talk about that. Paul, hey, I don't know about you. I don't see a lot of economic growth. I don't think interest rates are going to go up. I'm going to stay in bonds. Okay. There's three things that can happen for bond investors. One is interest rates stay relatively flat, which the Fed and the Treasury Department, and quite frankly, worldwide, governments have been doing everything they can to keep interest rates at a low level in the hopes of boosting the economy. At any rate, that's great, except that they don't have total control over that. The market also has a say. the market is less predictable. If you think back, I'm sure most of you were around in the 70s, maybe. You might have been children. But if you think back, the Fed back then tried to keep a handle on interest rates, and then all of a sudden, it didn't work, and they shot up. And I think that's what's coming for us. Now, what does that mean? Let's cover the three scenarios. Rates could go down from here. Japan and several other countries have experienced negative interest rates, meaning you put in money and they charge you interest to hold it. Lovely, huh? But you can gain money in bond funds if interest rates fall. They just don't have that far to go. The third scenario is interest rates decrease. So how much are you going to lose? All right. There's a word called duration. All it means, and there's several different ways to calculate it, and it's an estimate, not a guarantee of what's going to happen, but it's an estimate of what's going to happen. Intermediate term, generally speaking, is 7 to 10 years. If your duration is 7 and rates go up 1%, you lose 7% of principal. Let's repeat that. You can get the duration of your fund, by the way, on Morningstar.com or ask your financial professional or call me up and say, hey, Paul, what's the duration of this fund? Duration gives you an indication of the principal loss you'll experience if rates go up 1%. What if they go up 2%? Just double it. So intermediate term goes from 7 to 14. Well, that's not really... It's 7% of the original investment and then 7% of 93% of the original investment, so it's actually a little less than 14. Let's not make this too complicated. Every point, you lose 7% of whatever the value was before that rate increase. It's the easiest way to say it. It can get ugly. It can get real ugly. If you're in a long-term bond fund with a duration of 10, you're losing 10% every time rates go up a point. Back 30-something years ago, hey, the interest rate I'm getting on it is 10%. That's not true today. And that's why it's time to get out of bond funds. You don't want what is supposed to be the safe portion of your portfolio. It may be the most risky, and you don't want to lose money, particularly if you're approaching retirement or are retired. Because there's another big difference between bond market debacles, crashes, than stock market. They take forever to recover. Stock markets, you think a year or two is a long time for a market to recover? Bond markets, take back a look, 1960 or so up through 1982. Interest rates were going up continuously, particularly in the latter part of that period. Bond funds did not do so well. Bond funds did not do well at all. And parents probably from that time period were telling their kids, never buy bond funds. There weren't that many of them back then anyway. But the losses experienced during that time period, the stock market didn't do that well for some of that time period either. The losses added up and took a long time to recover. Took a long time to recover. And that's what, if you can prevent that, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? So here's the message. There's a storm coming for you if you're a bond investor. Period. End of story. I can't tell you when. Okay, this is not, I've been saying this for 3 years that it's coming. I'm still right. But it takes time for these things to develop. And more importantly, nobody has a crystal ball. But what we do know is if rates stay the same, you're not earning much. If they go up, you'll make money. But how much, go down, you'll make money. But how far can they fall? If they go up, you could lose substantial amounts of your portfolio. And that does affect the amount of income you're getting. Because keep in mind that neither the principal or the income of a bond fund is guaranteed. On the annuity, both are. Except for money that you actually pull out in the distribution stream. But the income lasts for a lifetime. The second way, by the way, you can lose money in an annuity, if you were to buy one and sell it before the end of the surrender period, generally you're looking at 5 to 10 years. There are surrender charges that are hefty. But if you're buying it as an income investment, you're not going to sell it. That's the thing. Are you really going to go 100% stocks on a given day? Maybe if you are gambling, you are. What I want to try to prevent happening is you getting in a situation where you have nothing left to lose, which incidentally is another song from Alan Parsons' Turn of a Friendly Card.
Nothing's good that yours is bad. The heat goes on and it drives you mad. There's nothing more to say. You gave the best you had to give. You only have one life to live. You fought so hard, you were a slave. After all you gave, there was nothing left to say. Your life in a thousand ways. The dawn of reason lights your eyes. With the key you realize to the kingdom of the wise. Nothing gained. No more lingering doubt remains. Nothing sacred or profane. Everything to gain.
One quick thought on that song that I meant to mention, it's Nothing Left to Lose, Alan Parsons Project, Turn of a Friendly Card. The first line is nothing is good, the news is bad. You know, for 30 years, I thought it says nothing is good that uses bad, which I think is possibly a better line. I totally agree with it. Listen, we have crammed a lot of info into this show, so we're going to expand on it next week. Until then, have a great week. Thank you.